Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson, the British one. He's back, or rather, I'm back.
The British one. I tell you what, I don't know what American Pete has been doing, but his voice is getting more and more rugged and rough and tomrous. He's just, hey man, how's it going? He's like kind of, he's like being gargling sandpaper or something.
It's all those cigars, isn't it? Now he's an established influencer. He spends his afternoons smoking cigars on his palatial estate built off the empire of Twitch.
Can't believe it.
That's it, isn't it?
Look at, he needs to look after that voice. It's important. It's his meat and potatoes.
It is. I actually want him to MC this event we're doing in the UK over Christmas with you. You down. I hope you're available. Yeah. Probably not. I should have checked that you are in advance. What are you doing?
You asked me whether I could do it, and now you're handing it over to another Pete. This is unbelievable.
Best of both worlds, isn't it? I have an American Pete and a British one, and then you just sort of pick on the night.
Chris, Pete is the most skilled of both of us. I'll be there and I'll do whatever you need me to do, but don't feel like you have to use me, because American Pete is a charisma bomb.
He
as
certainly
discussed.
Is. Well, at the very least, you can handle the coats. We'll have you in the cloakroom.
All right, I'll handle the coats. Lovely job. I'll rifle through people's wallets.
I wouldn't expect anything less from you, Pete. But I am back from my 750-kilometer cycle. And Pete, the first thing Pete said to me was, "Did you actually cycle it?" Yes, I did cycle it. Yes, yeah. I did. And it's live. I streamed it every minute of the day to thousands of people, watched us do it, struggled to death, 750 kilometres without stopping, not a single rest
nearly
day.
Nearly getting run over.
Oh, it was painful. Very, very painful. I've spent the entire day.
The problem is you spend a lot of your time complaining that you're not very fit and, you know, you're carrying a bit more timber than you did 5 years ago or whatever. But, the situation is you literally managed to do this without dying. You literally managed to do this every day, get up and cycle. That's why I'm surprised, because you had me sort of thinking that you were this unfit wretch. But turns out, you know, you're in your early 30s and you can get away with this sort of thing. That's what I'm putting it down to, not my genetic and physical impropriety.
It's the power of peer pressure, caffeine and ibuprofen. Honestly, without those three things, I wouldn't have pulled it off. I did do a little bit of training beforehand. I did cycle a little bit on the exercise bike at the gym. Yeah. But yeah, I really did go into this pretty unprepared. Like, I got the bike like 4 days before the cycle, right? And yeah, it's a miracle we pulled it off. Even Connor in the last 3 days. Connor's a pretty fit young man. He's only 26. Bastard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's quite fit. And he was struggling really badly on the last 3 days. And I somehow turned it all around. It turned out in the first 4 days, my bike seat was like 2 centimetres lower than it should have been, which was putting immense stress on my kneecaps, and I couldn't stand for the first 4 days. After I made that discovery, raised the seat, my legs were actually fine for the rest of the trip. It's just my back hurt because I had to sort of hunch over the handlebars a lot more, and I got really bad back pain. So, yeah, it was really painful. I got sunburn. We cycled through the rain. We cycled into 30-kilometre winds. I didn't fall off the bike once, but Connor did, and he live-streamed it it, so that was fun. Falling off his bike. We only had one
I did see that.
Argument off camera where we nearly murdered each other, which is pretty good for 7-8 days on the road. So all in all, a success.
Yeah, and you're both strong personalities, and I'm using that in I'm using that in the best way I can. Yeah, that's pretty
basically
cool.
On the fourth day of the trip, or the fifth day, it was billed as the easy day because we had just 60 kilometers to cycle to Sapporo, right? And the previous days were like 80 or 100. Yeah. But it turned out that Google Maps just took us on a detour that was 20 kilometers the wrong way, and then we had the windiest weather of all. And when you're cycling into a headwind, it's like cycling uphill, but worse. Like, you can go downhill and the wind resistance starts to push you back up. It was really bad. And then we arrived at the hotel in Sapporo, and I was like, I'm going to die. Like, there's no way I can finish this cycle. And then Connor was like, we need to get up at 4 a.m. tomorrow, 4 o'clock in the morning. I was like, Connor, I'm not getting up at 4 a.m. for my own funeral. I'm not getting up at 4 a.m. for anything. And he's like, you're such a loser. Why don't you get up at 4 a.m.? And I was like, I'm not fucking up. I went mental about 4 a.m. In the end, we adjusted the last 3 days of our trip. The last 3 days, originally, it was going to be like 80 kilometres, 100 kilometres, and then 164 kilometres on the last day, the big one. And we worked out that was literally impossible to pull off without dying on the last day.
Right.
So we managed to spread it out and do like 110 kilometres each day or something, which made it more manageable. But 4 a.m., there was no way I was going to like have 4 hours sleep and then cycle 150 kilometres. And so I exploded.
It just seems like you'd be better spent kind of having a normal amount of sleep. And then, like, surely your body needs to heal.
That was my argument. But the main reason we argued was
because
we're just both obliterated at this point. Like,
absolutely knackered out your bums.
The first part of the cycle, everyone was happy. There was smiles all round. And the second half, it was just a shit show. But luckily, American Pete turned up and brought us some sort of court jester humour that kept us going, and his positivity. He gave us these, like, Winston Churchillian style speeches at the start of every day, like a call to arms at the start, and that fired us up, or made me just want to cycle away from him. Either way, it motivated me to get on the bike and fuck off. But we did it, and we raised $300,000 for charity, the Immune Deficiency Foundation.
That just seems like an unholy... That's the sort of money that, like, Blue Peter used to raise in the 90s. Like, it's just, like, it's a lot of money. Like, I don't think you appreciate... That's a house. You could buy a house. Or if you go to the house Instagram profile that I go to, that shows you a lot of cheap rural homes in Japan, you could buy about 10 houses for 300.
I know exactly the profile.
It's incredible.
As well.
Well done. Is it basically me and Taka from the band Feeder? We're the only people, I think, in my sort of Instagram profile that follows it. And he always likes all of the houses. I don't know why. He just likes liking the houses.
I get it. But that's a good way to spend 300,000 on it. You know, these rural houses go for cheap. But yeah. You're right, though.
Buy one of those influencer
houses.
It is
insane.
Just sort of go, we're not giving the money to charity or the Israel Defence Force, like you said. You're going to be giving it to the... we're going to just make a big house and you and Conor are going to live in it.
It was rather unfortunate.
Holy matrimony.
The Immune Deficiency Foundation is the same acronym as the Israeli Defence Force. A lot of confusion in the first 3 days.
They need a look on their branding. Come on, guys. Are you immune to good press?
It got a bit confusing early on. A lot of viewers were like, why are you funding the Israeli Defence Force? Haven't they got enough budget already? Honestly, the power of streaming, right? It worked. It worked. And everyone got fired up.
Yeah.
And Pete did a great job, like, getting folks to donate. And credit where it's due to Connor, you know, he kept the stream going every minute of the day. Like,
yeah.
I would have been able to do that. I was, like, dead on the second half of the trip. I could barely speak, let alone maintain a stream with 25,000 people. So, yeah, fair play to Connor.
So how? Let's talk tech, because that's the reason why I'm here. I want to know about the tech. So he's got a battery. He's got how much battery power has he got on his back? Because obviously he has to run a computer. Is it just like an off the peg computer that someone's modified? How does it kind of work? What are these kind of mobile streaming
setups?
It's
tricky. Actually, both Pete and Connor have one of these setups, IRL streamer backpacks.
Right.
Basically, you get a big battery so big you can't fly on a plane with it. So you have to have it shipped in like in a advance because it's a battery that could take down a jumbo jet if it exploded, basically. And the battery will last 12 hours without failure. The battery is connected to like four modems, four different routers, each for different networks and things, to make sure there's absolute coverage on every part of the journey. And then that's connected to the phone, and then the phone is connected to a computer at Connor's apartment, and that loads it all up. And so it's sort of connected to that at all times. And
so you're
it's confusing.
Right, okay. So you're so you're streaming. Oh, so the computer at home does the streaming and you are streaming the footage to your computer
at
home,
which is really broadcasting. Yeah, I think that is how it works. Yeah.
That makes sense, kind of, sort of. Yeah. Okay, right. Okay.
And that's pretty much how it works. Because I remember one time I did a stream with Connor in Shinjuku, and I think we were walking around Shinjuku or Shinokubo or somewhere like that, and we were about to kick off, and then it turned out Connor just hadn't switched his computer on, so we had to go all the way back across Tokyo to his apartment, switch it on, and all the way back over to Shinokubo. Nightmare. But
I've made a terrible mistake.
It worked though, and it worked really well, and there was very few technical issues, so turned out really great in that regard. The future, innit? Kind of wish I had a IRL backpack now. If only
IRL. Just get yourself a big battery. Make yourself one. Make
effort,
your own one.
Lots of effort. But the video of the cycle will be coming out in a few weeks, guys. It's being edited right now as we speak. So keep an eye out for that. Wacky workout coming soon. It's probably going to be an hour long.
Wacky workout.
It's going to be so long. I thought we could break into episodes, but then I thought, let's just make one big epic episode, right? And like with the original journey across Japan, I got a lot of criticism from people who were like, oh, I wanted to see you on the bike more. There was too much culture and interesting things. I wanted more bikes and more scenery. This is just literally
more bike
this
stuff.
Is just like literally just bikes. More bikes and then bikes with fields. And so that will make up for that. But interestingly, I weighed myself before and after the start of the trip, right? Before I left, I was 84.6 kilograms. I've written it down on this piece of paper. How much do you think I weigh 8 days later and 750 kilometres?
84 points. I think you're probably down to 80.
I weigh 86.5 kilograms.
It's all muscle, baby.
It must be.
It's all muscle.
So I looked into this because I felt like I've been robbed because I thought, you know, I was prophesizing coming back from this cycle being like, I'll be a whole new man. You're going to see a whole new Chris. And I came back heavier, but it turns out, I mean, I only finished the cycle like 48 hours ago, and my muscles still ache and are very sore. And apparently your muscles, when you work them out a lot, and I mean a lot, like all day every day for 7 days, it makes them really swollen and inflamed. Yeah. And because of that, they're sort of filled with lots of with water. So hopefully in a few days time when they're less swollen, in 3 days, I'll weigh myself again. And if I'm not lighter than when I started, I'll be absolutely depressed. Because that'll be really annoying. Especially as I've got to run a fucking Spartan race next week. And I was banking on being like 3 kilometres lighter, 3 kilograms lighter, sorry, before I do that race.
But so if you ever sort of see those kind of like lads and lasses who run across like the entirety of America,
that'll be me.
You will always see that they always put on weight before, so they're actually, you know, a good stone overweight. And when they do those endurance races where they run the entirety of the US or whatever, they'll ship a stone in the time, I think. But they're always at the start of it, they're always like a heck of a lot at overweight, because you just need the power. You need the power.
Well, they call it carb loading, which is expression I only discovered before the cycle, where basically the day before you do any big fitness activity like cycling 100 kilometres, you're supposed to load your whole body up with carbs, devour as much as you can, and that will like flood your like muscles with glucose and all the energy overnight that you need to sort of power yourself through on the next day. So I was eating an awful lot on this trip, I have to say. If it wasn't like 3 packets of energy jelly being stuffed into my mouth, it was some sort of brownie that Connor had got from his friend Josh that I was devouring. So I did eat a lot.
Steady.
And you,
What did he get? What's his what are these brownies you've been chomping?
There's nothing. Watch out. Pete Donaldson brownies. Okay. They're full of healthy, non-drug based products. Peanuts and excitement and chocolate. It was good. But like, yeah, you've got a carb load. And so I'm glad I learned that, because of all the other fitness things.
You're Michael Scott eating the carbonara in the car park before
that's
the run.
Me. But yeah, so I learned a lot from doing this, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the end result is in a few days' time. Will I magically wake up one morning and be 3 kilograms lighter? Probably not, but we'll find out soon. Oh dear. We got a story this week from Kat from Sydney, and it begins, "Dear Chris and Pete, I've got a story for you." Ooh. In February 2020, I travelled to Japan from Sydney, Australia, with my parents and sister for our third family trip to Japan. We'd booked dinner at a fancy sushi restaurant in Kanazawa as a special treat. The day before booking our restaurant, they called and said, "There's a TV crew coming tomorrow night to do a feature on the restaurant. You don't mind, do you?" And we said, "Yeah, sure, no worries, don't worry." We thought, wow, what fun this will be. As soon as we arrived at the restaurant, we realised we were there, or we were to be, the main attraction of the TV shoot. 4 white people at a sushi restaurant, who'd have thought it? As we entered, an NHK camera crew suddenly appeared, and it was lights, camera, action. They guided us to our table and immediately launched into an interview. "Wow, so you're from Australia. Have you had sushi before?" And many other stupid questions. We ordered our sushi and sake. Too overwhelmed by the cameras and the attention to pay close attention to the menu. The main event, of course, was the food. It was delicious, by the way. The rest of my family ate their nigiri sushi very quickly before the camera crew realised, and suddenly only my piece was remaining. The cameraman said, "Stop," and focused his camera on my face. He said, now you can eat the sushi. Normally I bite nigiri sushi in half, but I'd heard the traditional way is to put the whole piece in your mouth, so that's what I did. I have no idea what fish it was, but it was quite difficult to chew. The cameraman kept filming, and I kept smiling and chewing. He asked me what I thought, and I nodded and gave him a thumbs up because I still couldn't swallow the fish. The thought of a video of me struggling to chew a piece of sushi being played on Japanese TV, probably accompanied by ridiculous laugh tracks and crazy sound effects, still haunts me to this day. We wonder where the footage has ended up. Kat from Sydney, Australia, clearly struggling to eat some sort of squid or octopus there. Oh God!
Could we discount the fact that she may have eaten a watch strap?
Oh,
by accident, just chomped it down. Oh no, I can't eat this. It's weird that you'd be in just pounced on, and then they are basically telling you when you are and when you're not allowed to eat and stuff. Are you paying for this? Are you going to pay for it? No. Okay.
It's a little bit rude, isn't it? It is a little bit rude.
Yeah, they paid for that. Terrible.
They didn't say the TV show paid for it, as they should have done out of a gesture of kindness.
No, I think so.
Cheeky Japanese TV. Bastards. What a crappy show that is. Japanese as well. White people try sushi. Let's enjoy. But
have you tried sushi before? Yes, because it's now. Yes, because it's not 1983. Exactly.
Yeah, I've had Yo Sushi in England. I know what sushi is. So yeah, I wonder what the sushi was that she struggled to make her way through. I'm probably thinking it's squid, which can be a little bit tough, right? Fair. Is there any sushi, any fish you struggle with?
No, I was on holiday in Malaga a few weeks ago, and I absolutely destroyed a mound, like a massive sort of molehill. Of cuttlefish.
Oh my lord.
And that was just for lunch. And I'll just eat anything. I'll eat anything.
You're a monster. A platter of cuttlefish. Good God. Yeah, I don't think I've had cuttlefish here in a long time. There's always this joke that cuttlefish is really popular in Japan, but I don't think I've seen it or tasted it that
is
much.
It?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Before we get into the news of the week, compliments of Pete, I just want to say, guys. Yes. A few of you have messaged me about Japan removing the tour guide requirement for foreign tourists. There was a lot of excitement last week when Japan announced that you could now come to Japan and you don't need a tour guide, right? You may recall that the rules were you could come to Japan on a prepackaged tour, but you needed a tour guide, like North Korea. You couldn't have fun. You had to go to the designated salmon restaurant and you had to do whatever you were told. Now, they've got rid of the tour guide. They've raised the cap of people, foreign tourists, to 50,000, but it's still like bullshit. Yeah, yeah. 50,000. I mean, what was it before? It was something like 1.5 million tourists a month. Now it's 50,000. Mm. That's basically
right.
not tourists at all. But to come in on this new sort of revolutionary concept, you've still got to book as part of a package tour. I believe that means you've got to basically have your accommodation, transport, sightseeing itinerary, everything like that already sort of predetermined.
Ratified.
Yeah, which is kind of, you know, it's better, but it's still kind of crap. And
but does that mean, so say you're going to be sort of booking a trip to, I don't know, for the sake of argument, Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka. Now, you have the things that you've got booked. I want to go and see that, and I want to go and see that, and I want to go and see this temple. Does that mean you're allowed to not do those things, or just go somewhere else, or just how restrictive is it going to be?
Well, this is the thing, right? Exactly. I think there's a lot of confusion. I've seen package tour companies that are like, yay, but we don't get it. And it's incredibly vague. It all feels more like a PR stunt than actually a practical step in the right direction. And honestly, yeah, it's not really clear how this works. Like what it is. Mm. I know the reason they want it to be a package tour is because if you bring in COVID or get COVID, it's a lot easier to sort of trace it, right? It's a lot easier to trace where you've come from, what you've been doing.
Where you've been.
But I think it's just right. ridiculous. And I think it's more just a PR stunt to just very gradually, slowly but surely, open up the country. And personally, I don't think I'd advise people to come on this tour. No matter how tempting it is. You think you could just break away from it, though. Like, yeah, I'll follow the tour and then just get in a taxi and drive off.
Oh, no, I fell down a hole.
I fell down a hole.
I fell down a decorative manhole.
When I woke up, I was in Bar Rockaholic, which wasn't part of the package tour. Oh, God.
There's a video. I follow Bar Rockaholic on Twitter, and they keep posting this video of how to find it, because it's quite hard to find from the Shibuya crossing, and then basically explaining what you do at entry, basically, and it's just a lot of alcohol gel, in London. I mean, obviously, we were here not that long ago. There's alcohol dispensers everywhere, but none of them have alcohol in them anymore. Like, we have completely just given up on it all.
Tragedy, isn't it? Tragedy. What's happened to the world? But I don't know. But I mean, like, this is rubbish, obviously. And it's encouraging that things are moving towards this. They can't. Between this and just having normal tourism again, they can't have another step, right? This means we are now literally just one step away from them opening up the country and having business as usual, which they need to. The current government's it's losing popularity fast, mainly because of the Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe, and the fact they've got a very expensive state funeral, and he's not at all popular now, even though he's dead. He's not popular because of the affiliation with the church. Remember the rather shady, culty Church of Unitarianism, which sounds that really evil cult out of... Do you ever play Dead Space? Is it Dead Space? Remember that horrible...
Space?
There's literally a...
I realise I could have absolutely bluffed my ticket there, and I hadn't played Dead Space. It's the one where you chop limbs off space monsters in subway stations with rotating...
But the villains are like this church called like the Unitarian Church, and so whenever I think of this church
that rings a bell.
Caused all these problems in Japan politically, I always think of that. But anyway, but going back, the government's not popular. It needs to be more bold. It needs to let in tourists and start having business as usual, getting those... smashed to pieces tourism industry back on its feet, especially as Kyoto is going bankrupt as we speak.
I think that Joey the Anime Man was talking about how this is good for one thing and one thing alone, the tour companies that do skiing. So obviously, Hokkaido skiing, it'll be a good thing for that, because people generally use these tour companies for the specific reason that they want to go skiing.
That's a good thing. But, you know, package tours are typically more expensive than your average independent travel bookings. So that's one downside. Yeah, though the yen is so worthless that your money will probably go a long way. But we'll keep you informed as always, guys. I am very optimistic that we are dangerously close, Japan being open. But we'll keep you up to date, as usual, on the Abroad Japan podcast.
I keep looking at the visa form that I keep threatening to fill in, but I just haven't had time to even look at it.
If only you had a visa sponsor.
I genuinely think at this point,
if only,
well,
if
I'll
only.
Just find someone. I'll just find someone. I'll romance someone. But well, that's what Joey was saying about his parents. I think the only way they can get he can get them in is by sponsoring their visa. It's like, it's just crazy. It's like, it's wild.
It's wild. It is odd. Sucks, eh? But tell us, Pete, enlighten us and cheer us up. Tell us what the news of the week is going on in Japan. Tourism aside, give us some news.
Well, look, I mean, it's not necessarily tourism aside, but obviously there's during lockdown and during COVID, the Japanese government, they basically handed out massive amounts of money to different prefectures to safeguard the economy and safeguard the people who live in that economy, in that prefecture. And as we heard a few months ago, the Japanese town Noto in Ishikawa Prefecture, instead of using it for hospitals and, you know, social security, they spent 25 million yen on a gigantic 13 meter long statue of a squid at a time. And they will look back and, you know, cities like Kyoto will look back and sort of go, oh, we're absolutely destitute. I'm glad we didn't spend 25 million yen on a big fucking squid. Well, let me tell you, Chris, maybe they should have done, because the famous squid, Noto is famous for its locally called squid, so that's why they've got a big squid in there. They spent 20-odd million yen, a big investment on a big squid, 16 months after the completion of the Ika King, as they call it. Noto is saying that the squid was like totally worth it, claiming the statue's result in visitors pumping approximately 600 million yen into Ishikawa's economy, more than 22 times the cost of the statue. So apparently they reckon that because of this squiddy statue, they've had more than 22 times the amount of foot traffic through the district, which, I mean, would it be fair to say that having a closed country where you couldn't really go anywhere means that there will be more inter-prefecture tourism, possibly? But, yeah, a visitor survey conducted between June and August this year, out of 1,125 people, 506 of them, 45%, said they'd come because they wanted to see the big fucking squid. But, I mean,
oh, my Lord.
I mean, I get it. I just question whether that's actually the case or not.
I mean, I was in striking distance of the... They call it the Ika King, the Squid King, right, as you said. And I was within striking distance of it just last month. And I didn't go and see it. Yeah. So if they'd asked me why was I in Kanazawa not to see the Squid King, or whatever the bloody hell it's called.
No.
This is ridiculous, this story. I mean, I remember...
This is ridiculous.
I can't work out what my position is on it. I think, because when it came out, there was a lot of criticism and despair that the government had spent 25 million yen, which is the equivalent of $250,000 on this squid statue, instead of like IC units and like vaccines or whatever. But we saw the humour in it. But the truth is, because of the exposure that this bloody squid has got, they said that they've had like 1.8 billion yen of free publicity from the media in Japan and globally. You know, it's been on the Abroad Japan podcast, so they've hit the big time, haven't they? But like, it's been in like news stories from the BBC to the Japan Times, CNN. They covered the king squid statue in this obscure little town in Noto, which is home to some good beef, some good wagyu beef, I'll have you know.
Good beef, great squid.
Well, this is bonkers. 1.8 billion yen is about 18 million dollars. So, not bad, isn't it? $250,000 investment, $15 million of free publicity, and 600 people or 500 people who said they went there because of the squid. It's definitely worth it.
Better than a kick in the squid, isn't it?
I know, I do want to go and see it, though. I do want to go and see it, but...
Yeah.
And the reason they did a squid, some of you might be wondering, why a squid? That is like, yeah,
why
it's
a squid?
Random, but like the area of Noto is famous for its gigantic squid. They fish out the sea there.
Right, okay.
So,
real and not
yeah,
real.
Real and not real. So there you go. Get yourself down to Ishikawa Prefecture. Yeah. Hop on the bullet train, yeah. 3 hours from Tokyo, and you can go and see a $250,000 statue renowned the world over for being of questionable worth. We'll be back in just a moment, guys, with the fax machine with your stories, questions, and comments.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Now we're back with the fax machine. What have we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Dawson?
We got Big Don from Los Angeles, Dripping Chris and Personal Pete. As a slightly larger than average American, 185 centimetres and 104 kilograms, I find it hard to find Japanese fashion brands that make sizes that fit me. Chris, where do you do your shopping? Or does your mum send you a supply of black tees from home?
I don't do my shopping at all. I have like 3 shirts in my wardrobe, and that is the way it has been. Typically, though, I do import them. Shoes are the tough one. If you live in Japan, no shoe shops will have your shoe size if you're over like 28 centimeters. I when I go back to the UK once or twice a year, I typically buy a lot of clothes then and sort of bring it back with me. And by a lot of clothes, I mean the same 3 fucking black shirts that I wear every day. Although I did receive my Dr. Jelly shirt today. That sold out pretty well.
Oh,
cool.
See it? Yes, I do, actually. I want to see the quality. I want to see the fit and the finish. I want to see the... I want to hear the smells.
I want to hear the smells. Here's the
smell
hoodie.
Smell how it sounds. I want it's good stuff. Number one best.
It's got that new hoodie smell. I can't actually... I'm really struggling to show this to you.
That's fantastic.
It's actually really good quality. I don't really wear hoodies. I'm too old for all that business. I'm not cool enough to wear a hoodie, but I do have a t-shirt and that fits really well. So it's a little bit obscure wearing Joey the Anime Man's face, although I suppose Dr. Jelly technically is a fictional character. But yeah, it's sold out. It's sold pretty well, and I actually quite like it.
Who owns the IP to Dr. Jelly? I'm worried that there's going to be like a Hulk Hogan versus Hulk Marvel court case where the WWF have to pay Marvel every time they say the word Hulk Hogan.
I own it. Well, I hope I do anyway. I own it with the guy that drew it. Retro Review, his name is. Really cool dude. But, and Joey gets a cut of the profits, obviously, because it's his face. So,
of course he does.
Everyone's a winner, especially Dr. Jelly. We've got a story here from Laura, who says, "Dear Cheerful Chris and Pleasant Pete, greetings from Melbourne. Ooh. I've been fortunate enough to be in isolation over my birthday with the spicy cough, and I had a fever dream of One Piece, my favourite anime characters, being chased through a giant castle while Chris narrated." You what? Bloody hell. What were you taking for your spicy cough? "My question for you boys is, have you ever had some interesting or downright weird dreams? All the best from Down Under, Laura." I mean, have you had a weird dream, Pete?
I mean, it's every night of my goddamn life. I'm doing something strange, and I don't know whether it's been the change of the weather here or something. I think I'm very sensitive to that sort of thing, and I'm just constantly dreaming from the moment I close my eyes to the moment I get up and I wake up and I'm absolutely knackered. Jackie and Nick were in my dream. We were digging for gold. Jackie and her partner Nick, and that was fun because I've not seen Jackie and Nick for a while.
Oh my god, that's really weird.
It's nice. My little dreams are like a little Abroad in Japan episode that I've directed myself.
Digging up corpses or whatever it was. Bloody hell, that sounds shady as fuck.
No, digging up gold. We're finding gold. Oh, I very much enjoyed the bit in a clip that someone clipped out of you, Natsuki, and Dr. Jelly himself on a Lido or whatever, a Lilo rather, where you said, "What is it? I've done all sorts," and it all goes quiet. Natsuki goes, "Pete done it." Yes. That really made me laugh. I was honoured, absolutely honoured, that Natsuki knows my second name. Pete the Donner.
I don't know where it came from. Yeah, I was sitting on the thing in the pool, and I said something that sounded vaguely like your name, and Natsuki just went, "Yeah, Pete Donaldson." It's a very jarring moment. But, you know, there
Pete
you go.
Pete Donald. I'm going to be called from now on Pete Donaldsorts, which is lovely stuff.
Yeah, I said, "We've done all sorts." And he went, "Pete Donaldson."
Pete Donaldson.
Pete Donaldsorts. Dear, oh dear.
It's good That's stuff. Good
we got one here from Matthew, who said, "Hello, Chris and Pete. My name's Matthew, and I'm from Perth." We've got a lot of Australians this week. Is everyone Australian? Where's all our Swedish listeners gone? We haven't had a Swedish listener in a while. Not that I've got anything against Australians, of course. My question, however, concerns the use of idioms in Japanese. In English, we often use phrases to convey a non-literal meaning. Common examples include saying that you're feeling under the weather when you're unwell, or that you're sitting on the fence when you're being indecisive. Are idioms used in Japanese? Keep up the great work, guys. Matthew from Perth. They've got idioms. I've not done a very good job learning them over the years.
No.
But there's like Neko ni Koban. I like that one. You know that one, right? I've taught you that one before.
Yes, but I can't remember it.
Neko ni Koban. It means coins to a cat. Like fucking wasting money, basically.
Okay.
Because to a cat, coins are nothing.
Nice.
I suppose the most popular one, one of the first ones you learn as a learner of Japanese is Sarumo kikarochiru, like even monkeys fall from trees. Which in Connor's case they do when he falls off a bicycle going at 20 kilometres an hour. But that's a popular one. Even people who are experienced fuck up from time to time. Sarumo kikarochiru.
Right.
Even monkeys fall from trees. Do you know any idioms, Pete, amongst your Japanese knowledge?
No, absolutely. I barely know the language, barely know any of the words in the language, and so I think idioms might be a step too far for little Pete.
I'd love to just to see you in a bar just whipping out a Japanese idiom, like even monkeys fall from trees, when you like spill some beer all over your jacket at a bar and be like, even monkeys fall from trees. They'll be like, you what, mate? It'll be really jarring. And then you'll be chigaimasu. Advanced chigaimasu. Japanese knowledge.
Sorry.
Dear, oh dear. I got like a book called like Japanese Idioms You Need to Know, and then I learned none of them apart from those two. So I feel bad. My Japanese has been sorry. Pretty poor. It's not good, Pete. I need to.
And it's getting worse. It's getting worse.
That'll be the goal for next year, right? Become mega brilliant at Japanese.
Mega brilliant Japanese. Yeah.
The next 4 months, get fit. The next 4 months after that, become good at Japanese. Let's make Japanese great again. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in, guys, to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back later in the week to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days. We'll see you right back here to do it all over again on the Abroad Japan Podcast. Bye for now.
Farewell.
Sarumoki karojuru.
In Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.